Blog Talk Radio.
Go ahead, pop off, me and my clique put on. I'm like a young McMahon, I'm here to get your bitch off.
Woo!
I'm down with no limit, I ride for the cause. I'm the nigga on the tank with the big fucking balls. And if anybody fuck with Snoop Doggy Dog, I'ma make his niggas put his name on the wall. And everywhere I go, I got Mr. Magic here, because I know that nigga don't care. He'll have that red shit pouring out your house, nigga. Any fucking time, nigga, any fucking where. Make him bleed is the motto that I live by. If you fuck with me, it's a must you die. Them niggas might can run, but them niggas can't hide. It's like shooting yourself. It's a suicide, KLC. Got to be hitting hard like Bert. Niggas in the know ya. Know I'm as Big Bert. Just like Soda Slim, he'll put you in the dirt. And have your picture on front of a t-shirt. And when I make moves, I got 100 niggas with me. Just in case a nigga out there trying to get me. All my niggas is down to squeeze a trigger. That's why I'm down for my motherfucking niggas.
Gentlemen, we have a very special guest with us. He is the king of New York. Give it up for EC Negro.
What's going on, man? How are you, brother?
I'm good. Yes. We definitely need a savior in New York. We got it.
Oh, we definitely need a savior, most definitely. And what I'm here to do and what I've been doing since I've been back has been nothing short of miraculous. And we're bringing attention back to New York wrestling the only way that we can. Everybody needs a hero, and EC Negro is that hero that the people salute and love.
Exactly. What's your memories of growing up as a wrestling fan?
Well, you know, I was fortunate enough to grow up in a household that wrestling was one of my first memories ever in my life. My parents told me that my first words ever were Rocky Johnson and Don Morocco, which is pretty hilarious. So I always felt like I was born to do this, and my brother Kevin was a hardcore wrestling fan, and my dad used to take us to Madison Square Garden in the early 80s. Like, I was in the garden for things that I don't even remember being in the garden for. So it was just, you know, it was always around, and it was always very prevalent in my life. I remember at a young age, like, walking to school and slapping fences and slapping leaves on trees pretending that they were wrestling fans, you know? It was something I always really wanted to do, and, you know, I'm glad that I was able to fulfill, you know, part of my destiny by becoming a professional wrestler.
Also, let's see, what about your memories of the doghouse also?
Well, you know, before we even talk about that, you were playing my old theme music, Down for My Niggas by C. Murder, when me and Casey Blade were the Dirty Rotten Scoundrels together, and it brought back a lot of memories. But for me, the doghouse was the greatest place ever I was very blessed and very fortunate to be kind of in the right place at the right time. I was around 18 years old, and I was looking for a wrestling school because I was doing backyard wrestling at the time. I was wrestling in my living room and stuff and, you know, living the dream, you know, vicariously through my living room and wrestling with my friends and my brothers and shit like that. And I met a guy named Darren Quick who wrestles by Devious on the Indies. He's one of my very good friends, and he told me that he was running a federation called Target Championship Wrestling, which is TCW. He was running it out of the doghouse, and we linked up, and we, you know, we hit it off well, and I just started learning how to be a wrestler through there, and I encountered a lot of great things. First person ever really showed me stuff in wrestling was Low Life Louis Ramos. He showed me my basic chain work, how to lock up, things of that nature. And Lathan as well. But then one day I was approached by Homicide, and he asked me if he could train me and train a few of my guys. Basically, what was happening at that time was that the doghouse was kind of losing talent because a lot of people from the doghouse were starting to do the indies. Like, they were starting to travel and, you know, the towns and stuff like that and getting work in like that. So Homicide wanted a new breed of guys, and I was one of them. Casey Blade was another one of them. All Money Is Legal was another group of the guys that he picked up, and we took it from there, you know, and we started training. We started doing the doghouse shows, and I met Casey Blade at the doghouse the first day that I ever went there. The first time we ever met, I gave him a German suplex, which was pretty stupid because, you know, just due to the fact that I was so green, I had no idea what I was doing. I was just so excited to be in a ring, and I felt by doing moves that made me a wrestler. And I'm very grateful that I was able to learn from Homicide, you know, footwork, psychology, how to work properly, how to sell, things of that nature. So my memories of the doghouse were great, and I always wonder what if, you know, like what would have happened if the doghouse would have still been around today. I think there was the doghouse would have been the most talked about wrestling school in New York history, because the amount of talent that they sent out to the indies before they closed down was really, really, was really great. There was a lot of guys that were hungry there, from myself and Casey Blade, the Grim Reaper, to Deranged, to Azrael, the Hit Squad, Low Key, Homicide, Tower of Torture, All Money Is Legal. And I could go on and on with the list of guys, but a lot of guys, oh, the Christopher Street Connection, a lot of guys came out of that. And so the doghouse was great. It just, it kind of served its purpose. But at the same time, it's still talked about today as one of the toughest schools. And I'll tell you, it was extremely tough, for sure.
Right. It was like a brotherhood also.
Almost definitely, man. I mean,
even Ezekiel came from that, Ezekiel Jackson.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry. Yeah, and at the time, Ezekiel Jackson was known as Ricky Atlas, a.k.a. Mr. Goodbar. He was named by Lathan. And I remember taking press slams from him. So imagine that big dude just lifting me up and throwing me around like I'm a nobody, you know what I mean?
Right.
So that was there were so many guys there and so many other talents that went through there, like the SAT and Red went through there. Matt Stryker went through there. Boogaloo Lou went through there with his lowrider. He had Eddie Guapo go through there. A lot of guys that made noise on the independents definitely stepped foot through the doghouse. Oh, my God, J-Train as well. So I'm just – there's so many guys that – You tend to forget all the names of people, but the doghouse was fucking stacked. Pardon my French, but we were stacked. We were like a AAA, you know, like we were talking about baseball before we started the show. We were like the AAA of wrestling, and just a lot of guys were getting released and becoming stars on the indies. You know, that's a good analogy to put it on.
Right. Yeah, the more they was getting popular all over, yeah.
Most definitely all over the Northeast. I mean, that whole group ran the Northeast for a long period of time. And I just wish, you know, like for me personally, I wish I knew what I knew, what I know now. Back then, I think I would have been a lot more successful. And I would have toughed out a lot more things that maybe at a younger age I thought was BS, you know, that I didn't really want to tolerate. But as you get older, you know, you start to learn what to take, what not to take. And I miss the doghouse. Like the group, the crop of guys that are out today don't know what it really is. Like it's really easy to get into the wrestling business nowadays. It's sad because people don't know about hard work. And I don't want to sound like an old timer because I'm not old in any way, shape, or form. But people really don't understand that work you got to put in to be a wrestler. You know what I mean? It's not about selling tickets and getting on a show. It's really about proving yourself to your sensei and to your school and paying your dues the right way and being really ready when you're released to the independent world so that you represent the school and you represent your teacher as well.
Right. And definitely Dirty Rotten Scoundrel was so over as a heel, like the number one heel that everyone came to see, also a pack house.
Oh, most definitely, man. We were ahead of our time, and we were stupid at the same time because we didn't realize how good we were. We didn't really work hard. You know, we were naturally good at what we did, and you know, we didn't know the business aspect of it. Back then, the DRS were more concerned with partying, and you know, we were kind of marks for ourselves. So when we started winning all these championships and things of that nature, we thought that we made it. And it was only the beginning because so many missed opportunities that we missed out on because of our lack of work ethic. And, you know, it's unfortunate because I really think if we would have did things the right way, we would have went down as one of the all-time greatest tag teams. And I'm talking about in the history of professional wrestling. I really believe that myself and Noel together were that good. We kind of complemented each other very well. I was the talker. He was the bumper. You know, we drew massive heat and like real heat, not this BS heat, you know, where you have to be vulgar nowadays and drop F-bombs and stuff like that. People genuinely hated us. And so many wrestlers nowadays are afraid to kind of get that real heel heat. And it's something that you shouldn't be afraid of. You should embrace it. I mean, a lot of the old-time greats, like including Jim Ross, they speak about it all the time, about how these wrestlers are scared to be hated. One of the reasons why the King of New York, E.C. Negro, who is a completely different character than the Dirty Rotten Scoundrels character that I played back in the days, one of the reasons why I'm doing so well right now is because I'm genuinely embracing being hated. And I don't mind it, you know? I don't mind getting booed. I don't mind people sticking the middle finger at me. I love it, and I understand that the only way for a good guy to be successful is to have an even better bad guy, to be his rival and to go against. So, you know, that's the element that we're trying to bring to the wrestling business right now, or the element that I'm trying to bring to the wrestling business right now. And I think I've been really successful at doing that.
Right. There was another one also that was getting heel heat, Skinhead Ivan also.
I just got into my car, so if you ask me a question, just say it again and I'll answer it.
Also, what's your thoughts of Skinhead Ivan?
Let me tell you, when I did my first professional match in the Elks Lodge for USA Pro Wrestling, it was against Crazy Ivan and Prince Nana, who a lot of people just associate with being, you know, a manager now because of his role in Ring of Honor. But he was one of the best wrestlers I've ever met in my life at the time that he was wrestling. He was so ahead of his time with his character, and he was a very good worker as well. And, you know, unfortunately, I don't know what the reasons was that he stopped wrestling full time, but he was a great character. But getting back to Ivan, I mean, it's funny how this Puerto Rican guy plays a skinhead and it becomes so believable, you know, but that's the beauty of wrestling and the art of wrestling. And he's one of the first guys that I really admired for drawing like tremendous heel heat, you know. He's a good guy. I actually did, we did the Jersey All-Pro show this Saturday, and I ended up doing a double shot that night where I wrestled twice on the show, and one of the times I worked with Crazy Ivan. He's just a great guy, man. He's a very good guy, and I'm grateful that I know him and I had the opportunity to work him on a few different occasions. I learned a lot from him.
Right. He was like that Colonel the Biz also in the day.
That's a good analogy. That's a good way to describe him, Colonel De Beers, definitely.
Yeah. Then you have, you know, the Muhammad Hassan that WWE actually fucked up the ball and dropped on.
I don't know. I don't know if I could blame it on Muhammad Hassan or I could blame it on the WWE more. I don't know who gets the blame for that truly. But Muhammad Hassan was a very good character, and I wish he would have he would have stuck it out a little bit more because he was really talented. He had a great body. He had a great look. He was a good worker. And, you know, at the time, Daivari was managing him. And then Daivari ended up becoming a very good worker as well. It's unfortunate, man. But sometimes things just aren't meant to be. So you kind of just have to roll with the punches and you know, on to the next one for those guys.
Right. Yeah, that was a they got kicked off the they kicked them off. The network told him that to get them off of TV, and then they actually released them. I think that was one of the worst horrible things right there they could have done right there. They could have reintroduced him or something as a babyface maybe later on.
Right, but he was so over as a bad guy. I mean,
right.
I said, for him it was right character. He was in the right place, but unfortunately it was just the wrong timing for that, you know,
right.
Because of all the things that were going on in the country at the time.
Right.
But it was brilliant, and that's the one thing that I feel like is truly missing from wrestling.
Right.
Wrestling, I get that wrestling is for kids now, you know, and it's about selling merchandise and all these things.
Right.
But the wrestling that I remember and fell in love with really pushed the envelope as far as what was done and what wasn't done, how violent it was, how all those things went, you know what I mean?
Right. Yep, it's now the pussification of America now.
Yeah, you know, it kind of is like that, you know what I mean? But I think wrestling is slowly but surely getting back to that. You know, you as a worker and as someone who has aspirations to be in NXT or the WWE or Ring of Honor or, you know, any major wrestling promotion, you have to really follow everything that's going on. And WWE is slowly but surely pushing the envelope again with certain things, even with the new animated show that they have on the network right now. I was absolutely shocked with how vulgar it was, but in a good way. It was very... You know, it's WWE's version of Family Guy.
Right.
And it was cool. Right. You know, it was cool to watch. I really enjoyed it a lot.
Right. And they kind of get more risque with Goldust again.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I would like to see, you know, they had this guy, Darren Young, come out as being gay. But they didn't push him as a gay character.
Right.
So what's the purpose of acknowledging him as a homosexual if you're not going to run with it and try to make money off of him? I mean, to me, there was no reason to make this announcement that he was gay if they weren't going to pursue doing anything with him as a gay
right.
character. Wrestling's all about characters. I mean, sure, you know,
right.
it's about technical characters.
Right. He could have became also the Black John Cena heel gimmick.
Yeah, he could have did that. He looks a lot like him, you know. But
right.
I remember him from the indies when he was Fred Sampson. And I worked with him a few times in WXW for the Wild Samoans and stuff like that. And he was a really quiet guy. And now that I know that he came out of the closet, I kind of, you know, maybe back then in the early 2000s, it would have been, like, shameful if he would have came out being that way. But he did a great thing. And I just feel like WWE kind of missed the boat on it and could have capitalized on it a little bit more than what they actually did.
Right. What's your thoughts on the working with the Christopher Street Connection?
Oh, wow. Those were some of my funnest matches with Blade. We had unbelievable chemistry, you know, because we were really good friends with them. I remember there was one time that me and Blade were hanging out in the Village. And this is a shoot. I'm not even lying about that. And I remember seeing Buffy and Mace walking around the Village holding hands, being in gimmick. Mind you, those guys aren't gay at all, you know.
Right.
Or they weren't gay in any way, shape, or form to myself. But, you know, they were in character, and they were another team that was ahead of their times. But they were very popular, too. I mean, they got to Japan with the gimmick. They were over in Japan. So they were very successful. They were the first match in the history of Ring of Honor. You know, for people that don't know, the first match ever in Ring of Honor history was the Hit Squad versus the Christopher Street Connection. And so they're a part of history. And they made a great impact, man. They were very good guys, and they were very good workers. And they're the kind of workers that didn't need to do much in order to be successful. You know what I mean? They
right.
believed in the philosophy of less is more. Where I also believe in the philosophy that less is more. So, yeah, man, they were great, and we had great matches with them, and I wish they were still around today wrestling, but unfortunately they both got out of the business for whatever reason they felt was best to do that.
Right. Any memories of Crown Time also? Was that one of your highlight matches for Dirty Rotten Scoundrels?
Yes and no. I mean, to be honest with you, and I don't like to talk badly about too many workers, but they were dicks, you know? They didn't really want to work with us. You could tell, you know, I'm thinking in my mind, you know, this is such a big match and a big opportunity for me and my partner to get recognized by the WWE because, you know, once a guy's released, WWE is keeping their eyes on them, you know?
Right.
So I thought it would be a great opportunity to work them, and they really didn't want to work. You know, they were there. I feel like they were one of the only name guys that we ever wrestled that kind of just wanted the payday and cared about making money instead of, you know, giving us a good match. It was like a 3-minute match. I would have much rather have worked an indie name on that show and been able to demonstrate what we do as characters and as we do as performers than to work guys who are names that don't really want to work. Like, sometimes it's not good to get the name guys because some of the name guys don't want to give you their all. They already feel like they've proven themselves. They're just there to make money and things of that nature. I'm in it for the competitiveness. And I want to get the most out of whoever I wrestle. And that was one of the instances where we really didn't.
Right. And I heard also on the indies also when it was released that they didn't want to job out to any tag team.
Well, I believe that. I mean, that's very believable. You know, they did go back up to TV, but it didn't last too long for them as Crime Time. You know, JTG had a better run by himself, but he wasn't really getting used
too much. You know, it's just one of those things, man. I wish it would have been a different circumstance. I wish, like, you know, okay, I'll put it like this to make it make sense. Sometimes when you go to the top right away and you don't go through the indies and you don't pay your dues as an indie worker, you don't understand the etiquette of how to be an indie worker when you go back down from the Fed back down to the indies. So,
right.
I felt like they didn't really want to do business the right way. They didn't understand that they should have probably been working hard to get recognized as a good working tag team. You know,
right. It
was an unfortunate situation. It wasn't a terrible experience. But unfortunately, it was one of those experiences. It was one of those experiences that that I wasn't like the happiest with. You know what I mean?
Right. Exactly. We've seen it also with even with the last person from Tough Enough from last year, Gabby,
right.
Cass Ruffini on the Indies, and she got badly beat down by female.
Right. I mean, a lot of those people, you know, they just get lucky because they get called up, you know. They have a look that appeals to somebody in an office watching a tape. You know what I'm saying? So they get up and they don't really some people aren't meant to wrestle, brother. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, for some people, they're just trying to get into it because they're about money. Like, I do this for love, because if I was doing wrestling to make money, I wouldn't be in wrestling. I would have chosen another sport to get involved in, but I genuinely love what I do, and I'm grateful that I'm able to be given an opportunity to do it.
Right. Y'all also used to tear down the house also with All Money Is Legal also.
Yeah, man, definitely. They were a great tag team, you know, and they were really good friends of ours. We graduated from the Doghouse at the same time, and we had really good chemistry with them. So it was very simplistic to do matches with people that you trust and matches with that, you know, with people that you're friends with. It's really easy to be stiffer with a friend than it is to be stiffer with someone that you don't know, because, you know, people might take offense to it. You never know in this wrestling game. So I definitely had a great experiences with them work-wise.
Right. What's your memories of Chris working with Chris Hero?
Well, I wrestled Chris Hero not too long ago for Impact Championship Wrestling, and it was one of my first matches back on the indies, and because I kind of retired for 2.5 years. I took time off, which I really regret now that I think about it. Now that I'm back in full time, I really wish I would have had those 2.5 years to better my craft and do things the right way. But it was a great – I had a really fun time with him. It was a good match. It could have probably been a little bit better, but he's a great worker. I respect him so much for what he did on the indies as well as Japan and NXT, because he was there. And I feel like it was unfortunate for him that he was released, because I think he was really that good. You know, his name was Cassius Ohno, which is KO, which is kind of the gimmick that they gave Kevin Owens, if you really think about it. So, you know, he was destined to do great things. I thought he had a great look. He reminded me a lot of Barry Windham, and he's a really nice guy, man. He's a nice guy, and he's a good businessman. He's having a successful run in the indies, and, you know, God bless him for that. But I have a lot to prove these next few years. You know, I want to go down as one of the all-time greats, and I'm going to go down as the greatest heel of all time. That's the mentality that I have. So, you know, I hope I get to work him again, because I think I'll give him a much better match than I gave him. Even, yeah, one of them.
Right. What's your thoughts of being part of UWF also?
Oh, man, the Urban Wrestling Federation. It was a good experience. I think if they would have came out, I know they're coming out again in a few months. I know Urban Federation's coming back. And I think this time around, they might be more successful than they were the first time because of how popular hip-hop is, and if it's done with the right people and things of that nature, I think it'd be very successful. But it was great. I could say that I was on pay-per-view. I got to wrestle in the Hammerstein Ballroom, which is a great building. You know, as you know, that Ring of Honor runs out of. Monday Night Raw used to run out of that building as well. So it was a great experience. I learned a lot of things from them. I just think that the people, I'm not too sure if they were doing it for money or for the love of wrestling. I don't really know. But if they do come back around again, I would love another opportunity to work with them and hopefully, you know, be in a better predicament with them this time around.
Right. Right. And mostly said that they was too stereotype also.
I mean, they were targeting a hip-hop audience, so the stereotypes had
right.
to be there. But I kind of felt like they were kind of doing what Lucha Underground did.
Right.
But they didn't do it with the budget of Lucha Underground. And this guy, Steve the Hustler, that was around at the time was supposedly a wealthy guy. But I'm not really too sure how much money was truly put into the product. And I also felt like the wrestlers were not taken nowhere near as serious as the girls that they had involved with the company, just as eye candy, as well as the rappers. I kind of felt like it's called Urban Wrestling Federation. You know, the focus should be on the urban wrestlers that were involved with the product. But that's just
right.
me, you know?
Yeah.
And if someone who's a wrestling head, you know what I mean? That's what's more important.
Right.
I'll be home in like 20 minutes, though. Huh?
Also, what's your memories of Pat Frank of Jersey All-Pro?
Great memories. He gave me my first opportunity as a professional wrestler to work on pro shows. And he always treated me very, very, very well. Gave me a lot of the best matches I've ever got in my career. I worked Chris Candido because of him. I worked BCW Arena because of him. I worked in many different places. You know what I'm saying? So it was a great experience. Pat Frank was a great guy. Gave a lot of people in wrestling truly a great opportunity to wrestle, and he gave a lot. He made a lot of stars. He made Jay Lethal. He made Dan Moss. He made a lot of other guys that he made Homicide. He made Low Key. So he made a lot of these guys that ended up becoming some of the greatest wrestlers that this world has ever seen. So Fat Frank was a pioneer of wrestling in my eyes, and Jersey All Pro was one of the if not the greatest company I have ever worked for.
Right.
And that includes Ring of Honor and things of that nature. I personally loved Jersey All-Pro for what they did and what they were about. You know, they really were about pushing guys, and they brought in a lot of names to put over their younger talent. So that's really what it was all about. You know what I mean? Like, wrestling's about making people and creating stars. So,
right.
You know, Jersey All-Pro is great, and Fat Frank was great, and it's weird to do Jersey All-Pro shows and not have him there anymore. Like, it was weird seeing him. It was weird seeing him in a casket, man. It bugged me out, bro. But he's in a better place right now. I know that for sure. So, you know, it's sad, but the show must go on. He would have wanted it to go on no matter what.
And also, what's your memories of doing the trial match for Ring of Honor for Dog Match in Baltimore?
Oh, it was great, man. I really thought that the match was really good. I thought that we got very over, and I thought we were gonna get picked up for whatever reason. It didn't work out, but we always had a good relationship with Ring of Honor, and I know myself personally, one of the regrets that I have was not getting signed by them, because I was literally sharing the same locker room with some of the greatest wrestlers of all time, and I'm talking about Samoa Joe, you know, CM Punk, Christopher Daniels, AJ Styles, Daniel Bryan, the low-key Homicide. The list goes on for all the great talent that came out of Ring of Honor, and I was there with them. You know, I was in the locker room for the first shows. I was a part of those locker rooms. So I saw a lot of guys truly be made by Rob Feinstein and Doug Gentry, and also Gabe Sapolsky. You know, they made a lot of great names, and I really wish I would have been able to compete on those cards. You know, it was a little heartbreaking to be in the locker room and to not be booked, but I got to meet a lot of people, and it was a great honor to be there, to be honest.
Right. Also, you worked it with ICW so many times. What's your memories of the indie company?
It was Jack Sabbath is one of my good friends in wrestling, and you know, he was a guy that he had something going well in the early 2000s, and you know, he just started developing a bad rep because he would keep on closing down his company and then coming back and then opening up again and then coming back. His only problem is that he loved wrestling so much that he wanted to put everybody on his shows. He wanted to give the fans such a show that he wasn't making money, because he would book all these name guys. And you know, you have to think business-wise. If I'm booking this wrestler for $1,000 and I'm selling 20 tickets a pop, how many seats do I have to sell in order to pay for that one wrestler? And then you think about the amount of names that are on his shows. He had names. And then he had the top indie guys that were making, they weren't making pennies, they were making good money. So Jack's mistake is that he booked too many of the name guys, and he never made a tremendous profit. But his shows were great. He put on great matches. He made a lot of guys. He made the Amazing Red and the SAT famous. He made a lot of guys. He made Low Key famous as well. So I don't think he gets enough credit for what he's done for the wrestling business and for New York independent wrestling. But Jack Sabbath did a lot of good stuff, and he was a very, very good worker at the time. You know what I mean? I mean,
right.
He was a very good promoter at the time.
Wow. One of my highlights of Dirty Rotten Scoundrels was y'all working with the Southside Players and I think that one spot y'all gave, I think, Mia Yum the driver.
You remember that? Awesome, man. Yeah, that was cool. And now she's doing her thing as Jade and TNA, and it's great for her. She was such a great person. She's such a great lady and a very good worker. And it was great that she was willing to take that bump for us, because the Dirty Rotten Driver is a really, really dangerous move, man. I mean, if it's done the wrong way. But we never hurt anybody with it, and we truly protected people as much as possible with that move. But that move was absolutely devastating. I remember hearing a story that a famous tag team that's wrestling today wanted to steal that move from us. But that never, they never did it, because one of the guys was really good friends with us. So they never took the move, but his tag team partner definitely wanted to take the move from us. And I'll keep that name secret, because they're still out there doing well. But, the Dirty Rotten Driver was one of the most devastating moves, I think, ever. It's just, unfortunately, we didn't get to the level of success that we should have. And if we would have, that move would have been recognized as so much more deadly than it did get recognized for.
Right. Definitely. You also worked with Danny D'Amato at JABW 19th anniversary show.
Yeah, I did. It was it was a cool experience, because at that point I wasn't even guaranteed a spot on the show. You know, that's what happens when you take time off. You kind of have to build yourself up again. You know, even though I was a JAP veteran, I kind of had to prove myself all over again with my work and stuff like that. And I thought I did a really good job at the anniversary show of getting this guy over, drawing great heel heat, and being recognized as what I believe I am, which is a great heel. I don't really think that there are too many people in this wrestling business that are better than me at what I do. I get a reaction from crowds that most people wish that they could get. And I'm really passionate about it, and I'm really grateful that I have that gift of getting people to really dislike me literally from the time that I get out of the curtain. But Danny at that time was really overweight, and he didn't really want to do much in the match, because he was getting surgery done the next day. So, we made the best of that match, and he was happy with it. I was happy with it overall, you know what I mean? So just grateful for... I was grateful to be booked on the show, and I actually worked him again. On the last show on Saturday, and the reaction that I got from the crowd was tremendous. So I was really happy with that. He's a good worker, Danny. He definitely paid his dues from where he started in comparison to where he is now.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. That's another one that definitely belong in the bigger companies also.
Who, D'Amato?
Yes.
He's a good worker, he's sacrificed a lot of his body for the business, you know what I mean? Whether it was to get himself over or whatever the case may be, but he definitely gave himself to wrestling in order to get himself over. So I respect him for what he did in that retrospect.
Right. Also, memories of Ricky Reyes?
Yeah, Ricky Reyes. I wrestled him recently for Ace Pro Wrestling at the Mike Morgan Arena in Wellington, Mike Morgan Jr. Arena in Wellington, New Jersey. And I first met Ricky when he started the Havana Pitbulls with Rocky Romero, who's doing extremely well for himself in New Japan Pro Wrestling right now. And he's a great guy, and he's a very talented wrestler. He's someone that I respect a lot. I had a very good match with him. And I also, when I did my WWE tryout years back for the Wild Samoans, he's the guy that I wrestled, and he made me look very good. I was very, very lucky to wrestle him. And you know, sometimes, you know, when you're not like we knew each other, but I wouldn't consider us to be like friends and stuff like that. But he's a good worker, man. And when I wrestled him the last time, I just realized how good he really is. He's truly a top-notch performer in the wrestling business. He really knows how to work.
That's definitely. What's your thoughts of Bronx Wrestling Federation?
My thoughts of the Bronx Wrestling Federation? Well, I'm the head trainer at the Bronx Wrestling Federation, and they gave me a great opportunity to come on board a few months ago and become the trainer there, along with Caveman and Montekia. He's another guy that helps at the school. And it's a great facility. It reminds me a lot of the Doghouse and the way that it's constructed. It has like a very gritty, older feeling to it. But it's a great gym. It's run by Bronco International. The address is 1123 Close Avenue in the Bronx. We do classes every day. Our next show is this Saturday, May 7th at 7:30 p.m. And it's going to be another good lineup. They have a lot of good talent there. And they also have some guys that I'm not really sure if they want to be wrestlers or not, you know, but that's not up to me to decide who works on the shows and who doesn't. But as far as the training is concerned, we work guys really, really hard there. It's not an easy training, and I don't believe in training being easy. I definitely believe in training being extremely difficult and you really pushing yourself to the limit as a wrestler. So I think the BWF is on the way up. I think they have some really good talent like E.A. James, Eric Jaden, that's doing really well for himself right now. E.A. James, in my opinion, is the future of professional wrestling. The Caveman and Montekia, I think they're a great tag team. The Super Savages, I think they're going to do really well for themselves. And I also think that they have a few other guys there that have potential to be very good, but they also have to come with the work rate and the training regimen. You can't only be a good wrestler the night of shows, you know what I mean? You can't just show up to do a wrestling match and leave. It's a school as well. And you have to really bust your ass to make it in this business. And I'm not too sure how many of those guys are truly willing to do that or not. I know that I am. And I know that at my age, I still have a lot left in the tank to offer this business. and I'm going to give this business everything that I can. Is it possible that I could plug something else right now?
Sure, go right ahead.
Okay, I just want to let everybody know that on Friday the 13th, Free Combination Wrestling, we're going to be at the Elks Lodge in Queens, 8220 Queens Boulevard. I'm heavily involved in this company, and I'm very excited about what we're going to be bringing to New York wrestling. The main event, the King of New York, EC Negro versus Ring of Honor superstar Moose with Stokely Hathaway versus former NXT superstar Bull James. It's an absolutely star-studded lineup for an independent show, and I think everybody should come down on Friday the 13th and check out BCW Presents Friday the 13th. It's going to be a great show. We're also doing a 36-man lightweight tournament called Flight Night, and the first match is going to have Pinky Sanchez in it. It's going to have former Hog heavyweight champion Smiley in it. It's going to have Sam Shields in it. It's going to have former CZW heavyweight champion and the current JPW light heavyweight champion Black G's, as well as former tag team champion of the House of Glory, and I think they might be the tag team champions again, and Private Party and Isaiah Cassidy, who's a really good up-and-coming wrestler, as well as Sebastian Cage, who has so much potential to be a great guy in this wrestling business as long as he keeps on doing what he's doing and putting in the work that he needs to put in. And we have Steve Scott versus Eric Jaden that night, Danny DeMonto versus the Grim Reaper, Willow Nightingale is going one-on-one with MJ Jenkins, then you have General Romero going one-on-one with Blake Morris. And we have the tag team match, which is the Super Savages, who I spoke about, Montaquia and the Caveman, going up against Certified Sexy, which is Gino the God and Nutrius X, with Sasha Jenkins in their corner, as well as, what's the four-way monster the match that we have that night, which is going to be, I think, one of the best unsigned talents today. And Mike Orlando fighting the Riot Rays. Also in that match is Stockade, who is the current NYWC heavyweight champion and the former Ace World heavyweight champion in TJ Marconi. And we have the Greek God Papa Don going one-on-one with a guy who I consider to be the future of this business, and EA James, who's going by the God of War gimmick that night. So it's going to be a great show. Nine matches in total. Tickets are only $20. Front row seats are $25. And I truly think it's going to be a great event. And BCW's concept is to bring charisma back to New York, to bring some old school wrestling feel back to New York. You mentioned Colonel De Beers, and you mentioned all these greats that you used to grow up watching. That's the wrestling that I grew up on. That's the wrestling that I believe is real wrestling. So we want to bring that back to the company, to the wrestling business, not to our company and the wrestling business. So, I just wanted to plug that show. I'm also going to be at PWA Connecticut this Friday night and PWF this Saturday night. And then next Saturday night, after the Friday the 13th show, I'll be at Ace Pro Wrestling to wrestle. So very busy on the schedule, and to everybody out there that's listening, I hope that you support your local indies, because these are the companies that are producing the stars of the future that you're going to see in Ring of Honor, TNA, Lucha Underground, New Japan Pro Wrestling, Evolve, and WWE in the future, NXT, things of that nature.
Definitely. You're making a big presence coming back to the indies scene for these companies, and also contribute to the business some more.
Yeah, I mean, most definitely. My objective and my only objective is to give back to the wrestling business as much as humanly possible. and being affiliated with these projects as well as other projects in the future that are going to be happening, God willing, will only solidify my spot as a top guy on the indies. I don't know what the future holds. My goal, obviously, is to be in the WWE or to be in NXT, which I think if I was given the opportunity, I would excel there. But at this current time, my focus is to just be the best performer that I could possibly be, as well as just give back to this wrestling business in any way that I possibly can. So that's what the King of New York wants to do, you know? And that's what I'm going to do.
Yes. Any other shows also in any other areas also? Hello? Oh, this phone is acting up. For this show, Wrestling the Factor show. Let's see what else happening right now. Yes, once again, Hogan is still trying to find another way to sue Gawker for the N-word coming out also. The nigger word in his transcripts that caused him to lose his job from WWE, and he trying to countersue him that Gawker sent it to media outlets, the transcripts. So this could be another win for Hogan again. Also, let's see what we got left here. Some more tidbits. Yes, TNA is still for sale. They still have a lot of investors looking for it, but one company out there is St. Clair Ring of Honor. They're interested in a tape library to go for their sports network. And also, this unknown company also wants more exclusive contracts so they can do more house shows and pay-per-view also. But the only problem with Dixie, she won't give out 51%. She'd rather have 51% of her company while the other investor gave 49%. Which she don't have, she can't afford right now to be in charge of the majority owner because they losing money left and right. She had to end up saving her company the right way. If not, this company is fucked. We don't want to see another company go out of business whatsoever. And I'm about to call it a wrap for the night. Yeah, we had also signaling also technical problems. Yeah, the Blog Talk, I guess they don't like Bernie Sanders or Yankees, New York Yankees supporters, so I will have to talk to him about that. Lay the smackdown on their candy asses. So, let's give it out some poll results right now. Bernie Sanders won in Indiana, beat Hillary. And Trump wins, beats Cruz, so he's looked to be the nomination of the Republican side. Hopefully we don't have to go to Canada. I don't think Hillary has a chance against Trump, but Bernie Sanders does. So, and do the right thing, Democrat establishment. Pick Bernie Sanders as your nominee to beat Trump by a larger margin. He has the independent voters, 100%. He has the Green Party. He has the Democrat Socialists. So, let's start a political revolution. And this is Wayne Benitez on behalf of Wrestling It Factor. Later.
Fuck them niggas. Fuck my niggas, boy. Fuck them niggas. Drums, I'm down. Fuck my niggas, boy. Fuck them niggas. Bitch, I'm down with no limit. I ride for the cause. I'm the nigga on the tank with the big fucking balls. And if anybody fuck with Snoop Doggy Dog, I'ma make his niggas put his name on the wall. And everywhere I go, I got Mr. Magic here. Because I know that nigga don't care. He'll have that red shit pouring out your hell. Nigga, any fucking time, nigga, any fucking well. Make him bleed is the motto that I live by. If you fuck with me, it's a must you die. Them niggas might can run, but them niggas can't hide. It's like shooting yourself. It's a suicide, KLC. Got to be hitting hard like birth. Niggas in the know ya. Know a man's big hurt. Just like Soulja Slim, he'll put you in the dirt. And have your picture on front of a t-shirt. And when I make moves, I got 100 niggas with me. Just in case a nigga out there trying to get me. All my niggas is down to squeeze a trigger. That's why I'm down for my motherfucking niggas.
Them niggas? Yeah, dog. You with him? Fuck him. Let's get him. Do him. I did him. We getting nutty in this motherfucker. I got my buddy in this motherfucker. Leave a nigga bloody in this motherfucker. We in the cutty, motherfucker. You done too much. You got it coming, motherfucker. Some of these niggas is bitches too. And some of these niggas look just like you. Well, where I'm from, we like to ride on fools. Do it from the shoulders, I do it from the toes. I do my dirt off on my lonely. See murder and magic, hell yeah, they my motherfucking homies. So when shit get thick and foggy, and niggas wanna act like they wanna get with Snoop Dogg, let me let you niggas know. Shit, fuck what you going through and fuck what you stand for.
Fuck them other niggas, fuck them all the niggas, I ride for my niggas, I die for my niggas, man. Fuck them all the niggas, fuck them all the niggas, cause I'm down for my niggas, fuck them all the niggas, cause I'm down for my niggas.